Hello, and welcome to the Inside EVs podcast for February the 24th, 2023. This is episode number 151. Thanks for joining us. On today's show, we'll be talking about Tesla opening up its global engineering headquarters in California, Geely launches Galaxy brand, and Toyota plans to build EVs in the US, and much more. I'm Dominic Ioni, Inside EVs forum moderator and Inside EVs editor. Joining us today is the consummate professional, Mr. Tom Malogny, senior editor at Inside EVs and host of the YouTube channel State of Charge. We also have the magnanimous Mr. Martin Lee from the EV News Daily podcast, which is available on all the best podcast platforms. And of course, Kyle Connor joins us from the majestic, practically palatial halls of Out of Spec Studios, where he produces high voltage videos for a growing number of YouTube channels. It looks like this week, halls of Out of Spec Studios is a Tesla Model S Plaid. And so welcome, everybody. Let's kick this thing off with what we've been driving this week and then get into some news. So, Tom, let's start with you this week. Actually, Martin, did you see in our Teams chat, Tom shared us some things. I don't know if you saw that or not.
Yeah, I did. I was just showing the hello comments. Let me go find those. Carry on.
No, sorry. So I just wanted to preface that.
Okay, what Dom's getting to is while I didn't drive it, I did sit in it. The first time I was able to sit in one of the new Amazon delivery vans made by Rivian, I had gone to a piece of property I used to own in Montclair, New Jersey, and I went and got a cup of coffee at convenience stores there. I always like to, when I pass by that area, I like to say hi to the people that I used to be their landlord and just see how things are going. I walked out and there was a Rivian delivery van parked next to my Rivian R1T, which was pretty cool. So I made a quick video short and talked to the driver. He let me go inside the van, sit in the driver's seat, check it all out. It's interesting how it looks so familiar. You know, it's not, I mean, obviously the layout's completely different than an R1T or an R1S, but all the bits you can tell are similar. The center display screen, even the steering wheel, even though the steering wheel is not the same steering wheel, it's just, you can tell it's made by Rivian. Just it's like the design language. So it was pretty cool. And he likes it. He said it's really good. And interesting thing is, that's only about 30 miles from where I live. But where I live, there's none of these Rivian delivery vans. I live in a more rural part of the state. And I guess the drivers have to drive further. And maybe that's a problem with the range. I don't know. But when I go east, heading towards New York City in the Montclair area, Fairfield, Caldwell's, whatever, they're all over the place. So I guess they're putting them in some of the more urban areas first. And it makes sense. On the display screen, the driver showed me like all his stops, like it's the maps pulled up and there's like, you know, 50 stops within like 10 blocks. So it's, you could just shoot from one to the other and the other and like use no energy, which it makes so much sense. The electric delivery vans. I'm still surprised we didn't see those before passenger vehicles, because the use case for them is just so perfect for urban delivery.
Right. Hey, so, How many packages did you deliver?
He actually did let me go into the back where the packages were, the driver. I hope he doesn't get in trouble for that, because I'm sure that's kind of not allowed. But it was pretty cool. I posted a video short where I just walked around, and then you'll see me go inside the truck and check out the driver's area. And the door that leads to the back is, see how the door's opening? That's power operated. You press a button on the touch screen and the door slides open to the back, which, you know, all good things that, you know, they develop to make things just a little bit easier for the driver. You know, you don't have to reach back and unlatch it and pull the door open. Just you pull up to your stop, you press a button on the center of the screen, you turn around and the door's opening for you. So good stuff.
You must do that, like drivers must do that 200 times a day or whatever. So just that one thing in terms of repetitive strain injury or just effort, and you know, you've still got to pick up a parcel and walk to someone's front door or whatever. So it's still a physical job, but just that one thing is really impressive. They thought of even stuff like that. But the cabin looks so comfortable to sit in. The glass house looks really big now that I see it in context. not just pictures or, you know, other YouTube videos. And it looks like a really safe place as well, because of course anyone that's driven a, you know, a bigger vehicle knows that, well, maybe if you're on the open road it's fine, but around town where a lot of these vehicles are going to be, there are, you know, we're trying to tell people, cycle more, get on your bike more, and you know, it, that is dangerous as well for cyclists. I've been knocked off before by a London black cab. They're not particularly big, but my goodness me, I was glad I was wearing a helmet that day, but it would have been bad news. But it's, you know, the drivers do their best and visibility can be really bad. So this looks really impressive. Did it feel big and airy when you were in the front?
Absolutely. You know, and to your point, it looked like it had really great outward vision. Now, I'm sure there's cameras and everything that work around the vehicle on the back. I didn't have it turned on to check those out. I should have thought about asking them to turn things on. But just from the passenger compartment, as you said, nice and comfortable, great outward vision. Everything's laid out right there. Your touchscreens are right there. So really nice. It seems like Rivian did its homework with the layout, you know, and it'd be great to really interview one of the drivers after a little while, after they've used it for a while, and they could talk about what they like, what they don't like, what they think could be improved, what are the things that were improved over what they had been driving before. I think that might make a good video.
Yeah. Goldfish asks, are all the vans four-wheel drive?
No, definitely not. I don't know. Are any of them four-wheel drive, Kyle? Kyle might know better than I do.
Yeah, we did one of these full in-depth tours with these a few weeks ago, maybe a few months ago now, and they're just front-wheel drive. So they have the Rivian R1T or R1S front drive unit with the dual motor up front, and then nothing in the back. But there is an all-wheel drive version coming down the line, so they're going to use the four motor setup. I think they should really use the dual motor setup that Rivian's working on in-house for that. We'll see. I don't know. I think it's, they can really slap whatever drivetrain they want in this thing, to be honest.
Sure. Yeah, no, I knew down the road they had a footprint to that, but I didn't know if they actually, if some of them on the road today were all-wheel drive. And it sounds like what you're saying is no, they're all the front-wheel drive units. So I think it's great. I think it's the right direction to go in.
Speaking of Rivian and motors, it officially started production of its Enduro motors for the dual motor versions of its vehicles today or yesterday. One of those things, we had the story this morning on Inside EVs. For those who don't know, Rivian currently uses four motors, one for each wheel in its vehicles. Right. So on last week's show, Tom, you told us that you had a new charger review coming. And of course, you were true to your word and you published a review of the Pergear P2 portable EV charger, and had like a somewhat dubious subtitle. So how did it do?
So let me first say one of the reasons why, because people always ask me, why did you select this particular unit? You know, it doesn't seem like it's a popular unit. Why don't you focus more on some of the units we all know about, which I do also. But I'm getting a lot of requests from people to ask for a dual voltage, a portable charger, something that they can take with them that can charge on 120 volt if that's all that's available, or 240 volt. So I've been looking for these units that are available on the market. I came across this Pergear P2, and interesting enough, there were already like 7 or 8 reviews, quote unquote, online of people that get them. The thing about these chargers now, these companies will send them, whoever wants a charger, if you for free, start a YouTube channel and contact a company and say, hey, I'll review your charger. And they'll just send you them because they just want reviews out there. Some of these YouTube channels have like 10 followers, but they sent them a free charger because they just want a review out there. And so I do my homework before I review the products. I look and see who else has done reviews, and I watch them and just get a heads up on them. And the funny thing is, one of the reviewers, and this is actually a credible site that we actually know these people, I'm not going to name them, that one of the features is they advertise on the website, when you press the tab on the connector, it'll open up a Tesla charge port like a Tesla connector does. And that's a pretty cool feature. If you have this and you have a Tesla, you know, you don't have to tap the charge port. That's one thing that I love about Teslas, that you pull up and you just grab the connector and the charge port door swings open. Really cool. So I'm watching this review and they're like, look, this is awesome. You press the tab, the Tesla charge port opens up. So I'm doing the review and I had my friend come over with his Tesla because I actually make sure it works, you know, and It doesn't work. It doesn't open up the Tesla charge port doors. So I contacted the company and I'm like, hey, am I doing something wrong here? Like this doesn't open a Tesla charge port door. And you advertise that it does. And the answer was, oh yeah, no, that doesn't work. So I was like, okay, it's on your website. And your influencers are telling everybody how great this is because it opens up a charge port door and they don't even check it. So they're like, yeah, it doesn't work. And I'm like, okay, so you know I'm going to really blast you for this when I'm making a video review of this. And, you know, that's really bad that you do that. So their answer was, okay, we'll remove it from the website. And they did. The next day I went on the website, that is gone. It doesn't say it opens up a Tesla charge port anymore. But that's one part of it. Another part of it, it's IP67 rating. Now, IP67 ratings are waterproof. Not water resistant. IP65 and 66 are water resistant. And on those, here's me with the I think coming up next, I do the charge port door. So we'll talk about the water resistance. It's IP67 rated, and IP67 means the unit can function in 1 meter of water for up to 30 minutes. And here I go trying it out. I'm like, yeah, that doesn't work. Let me see if his charge port door is broken. Nope, it's not broken. This thing's junk. So, but like think about it. How easy it is for somebody to test that. There's these reviews out there of people that have reviewed this product and like, this thing's awesome. It opens up a Tesla charge port door. Just press a button. Here's what I'm talking about, where I called them up and they removed it from the website. But so get back to the waterproof rating. And Martin, if you could jump to, I think it's 26 in the video. So when they're IP67 waterproof, I submerge them in water. When they're IP65 or 66, I just shoot them with a garden hose. So this was IP67 rated. You can see it on the bottom there. It's waterproof. So I dump it in a bucket of water and I let it run for about 30 minutes to make sure that, you know, it'll do what the IP67 waterproof rating says it will. Within 10 seconds, I fried the unit. The water, here's, I just plug it in. Now look, how long is this? And boom. And uh-oh. You can see the bubbles coming out. Look. Oh, no. That's there's your IP rating. I don't know how it got IP rated. With the cable strain, if you pull the cable a little bit on an angle, it pulls out of the cable strain. It's not watertight. So I don't know if they got it rated and then manufacture it differently. I'm genuinely surprised when this stuff happens, guys. You know, look, just pull a little bit on an angle and you get that. So, so it failed that test. Needless to say, it didn't score very well. It's not on my recommended, charger list. There's other units out there that you can get that are portable level 1, level 2, chargers that are probably a better choice. And, you know, listen, I've talked to this company now. Obviously, they're not happy with my review. No. If they improve the product, if they say, look, we're going to revise it, make it better, I'll be happy to review it again. I mean, that's what happened with the Shell Recharge. The Shell Recharge had a small unit that I tested, and it also failed a bunch of my tests. And I said, this is not safe. Don't buy it. And they actually won't. Kind of asked me to remove my review, but we won't go to that point. They said, we're going to redesign it, we're going to fix it, and we're going to put out a better unit, and we'll send it to you when we do. But they still haven't, as far as I know, and from what I can see on the Amazon where they're selling it, it's the exact same unit as I tested back, you know, more than a year ago. And that's another unit that I don't think is safe, and I would tell people not to buy it.
Wow, right on.
But that's why people trust your channel, though. Right. Yeah, so it's better not to, well, it's better to do the effort and put the yards in, but also better not to sugarcoat it. And if you're going to have a difficult conversation with someone who sent you something for free, it's like there's certain websites that I like to read. And then, so I have them in my RSS feeds. And then occasionally they'll put an article up and it's like, today's deal, battery powered lawnmower, here's the link. And I'm like, I'm just going to take it off my RSS feeds because, like, it's not a recommendation. I know you're making money. Like, everyone's got to make money. Websites got to make money and stuff. And it's like, you see that. And trust, modern media, YouTube, websites, trust is everything now. Yeah. Entertainment's one thing. Like, people watch this show for whatever reason, us four idiots talking every Friday. But trust, like, people come to your channel and they trust what you say. So, I mean, I'm sure that was a difficult conversation you've had. And you're like... Hey, it could have been a faulty unit. Yeah. So, you know, send you another one if there's a better one. And hey, yeah.
I get that. Oh, we'll send you another one. No, this is what I got. I'm a customer. This is what a regular customer is going to get. Cause for all I know, they'll send me one that they don't even sell. That's all been redesigned. They took it apart. They glued the seal. So you can't trust it, but it's just amazing that so many of these quote unquote reviews are out there and the people, they just unbox it. And they're like, look, it's got a 35 foot cord. You plug it in. Look, it's charging my EV. This is awesome. One of the reviews from this particular unit, this pair gear, an electrician did the review. He's an electrician. And he's like, this is great. It's a safe unit. You know, this is what I recommend. I've been an electrician for 30 years. It's got, you know, thermal protection, which this unit does have. Supposedly the connector and the plug are thermally protected. If it gets, I think, 70 degrees Celsius, which is pretty damn hot, it derates the charging. It doesn't give you the full power. But like, he was kind of promoting it as being a safe unit. And my God, you know, everywhere I turned, I was like, yeah, no, don't buy this.
Yeah. Hey, Tom, you also, so this week you have a Rivian winter range test. I think it's going live actually later today. I don't know if you want to talk about that today.
Yeah, we can chat about it a bit. People are going to watch the video. They're going to not. I'll say what happens in the video. So you might remember about a month and a half ago, I took my Lightning up to Vermont. My in-laws house, that's like my measuring stick. It's 211 miles. And in the summer, it's no problem with these vehicles. But, you know, it's cold now. So although not as cold as it usually gets. When I did the Lightning video, it was 17 degrees Fahrenheit when I left my house. And it was actually 17 degrees Fahrenheit when I arrived in Vermont because it got warmer during the day. But then it got colder as I got up to Vermont. So I did this test with the Rivian and it was a little bit warmer. It was 28 degrees when I left and it was 19 degrees when I arrived. So slightly warmer. The winds were about the same. We had strong winds on both trips. I had a 15 to 17 mile an hour, almost headwinds coming from the northwest, and I'm driving north. So I'm getting hit like this with headwinds. So that's it. It's not minor. You have to mention that because that has Kyle could tell you with his range tests, it has a big effect on especially cars like the Rivian and the Lightning, big blocks driving down the road. It's not like Tesla's model, you know, Kyle's Model S that he's sitting in now that can cheat the wind. These things are rolling bricks. So big problem. So I didn't know if we were going to make it. I arrived with the Lightning last month with 211 miles driven, 3% state of charge, and my consumption rate was 1.7. Ford doesn't give you 2 points past the decimal point. I really don't like that because it could have been 1.75, 1.74. For all I know, it was even 1.78. I don't know what their rounding up, rounding down policy is. So, it was somewhere greater than 1.7. And the Rivian made it. We arrived with 8% state of charge. Ooh. So 5% more, which surprised me a little bit. And what's that?
Yep, no sound here.
Hold on a second, guys. Sorry. God, it's the wind is so windy here that my garage doors are shaking. It sounded like there was like a motor or something going on outside.
Wow.
Yeah, the doors are vibrating. I never even experienced that before. 8% state of charge arrived with, I think it was 1.85 or 1.87 consumption rate. So better. It beat the Lightning. Both vehicles made it, but it slightly beat the Lightning consumption wise. So it was good trip. We made it both. I have that full video coming up probably today. It's all done and edited. I just got to push it out probably later today. If you guys now you know the results, but hang around for the entertainment.
Right. Hey. So a couple of people asking about my channel. So I started a channel myself. It has no content on it yet. I still have, I've I'm learning all about editing video this week. And so hopefully I'll have something up there later today. Actually, I need to make a thumbnail, and it's not going to be great as far as, like, you know, y'all used to Kyle and Tom making like professional videos. Yeah, not this one. Maybe hopefully they'll get better and stuff. But this first one's a little bit amateur. Anyway.
Dom, go back and look at Kyle's first video and my first video. Okay.
Okay.
You know, Kyle might have been more polished than me, but I know I was god awful back when I first started doing the videos. I'm still not great, but you know, don't feel bad. Just push it out there, and just you'll keep getting better.
Yeah, I don't feel too bad. I realize I have my shortcomings somewhat, and but hopefully it'll be you know, it'll be entertaining, or there'll be enough information for people at least that they get to see the car and some of the trip. Anyway,
what about the car? Have you just taken it out just to drive it like you do when you end up with a new car, just for the hell of it, or what's been going on?
So far, yeah, actually, I was like, there's trips I want to make, but I also want to, like, so I've got this new YouTube channel. So I want to record everything for that. So, but I need to start getting these other things out done before I, you know, start piling up the work there. So, but yeah, hopefully within the next week, I'll be going to the coast to check it out. I mean, I'll have it on the highway tonight. I've just been using it for around town. So far, no problems. I'm having a little bit of weirdness with my house electricity. I had the electrician out yesterday. Actually, they switched out a bad breaker, which I guess breakers can go bad. Who knew? And so now I can charge the car with a charger, and but it's only giving it like 3 kilowatts or something instead of like 9 kilowatts or 10, whatever it is that it gets. All right, sorry, I get distracted. But yeah, so I'm gonna have the electrician come out and check that out for me. I think Kyle mentioned it might be my house voltage sagging, so we'll look into that. And yeah, and we'll probably hopefully have a video off about it. And let's move on. So, Kyle, as is usually the case.
Before we continue, what's the thing with YouTube in terms of, does Dom have to hit a certain number of subscribers before he can name his channel or reserve a name or monetize? Like, what's the deal with the new channel? So what have we all got to do when Dom's ready?
Yeah, so mostly watch time is the hardest thing to get up when you start a new channel. Right. You know, there's a couple things YouTube wants before you can actually start making money, and it's 1,000 subscribers and 4,000 watch hours. You know, with a pretty big you know, audience here on the podcast, 1,000 subscribers may come sooner than you think.
Yep.
However, what's the name of the channel, Dom?
Drive Electric with Dominic.
Great. Can we leave a link in the pinned comment below this podcast, at least on the YouTube platform? Everyone go over and help Dom out and subscribe to that, because that was a big help. But then just let all of his videos play through. Don't even watch them. You don't need to. Just let them play through.
Build up the
watch hours, you know, and that's the path to monetization. And there you go, 45 subs already. That's awesome.
Wow.
And there's your Model 3 picture there at the top. Looking
I need
good.
To figure out how to make that actually work. I'm
subscribed.
We can talk about it later, but
am I in my account? Yeah, I am. Yeah, I'm not in someone else's account. So there, right, we're done. Subscribed. Good.
Great. And so I'm really looking forward to that. And Dominic was like, oh, I found a new program. He texted me this week. I found a new program on my computer that does cross dissolves. I'm like, wow. Okay. So early days of editing, and it's great. So I'm really looking forward to seeing today's video. I'll be watching, of course. And good luck on growing it. That should be awesome.
Subscribers
now.
Yeah. Wow. I'm an admin on Inside EVs. Can I do that from Inside EVs as well?
I
can. Awesome. I've got loads of accounts. Where's Motor One? I'll do it from Motor One as well. Yeah, you carry on. I've got some subscribing to do.
All right.
Subscribe. Yeah.
Y'all.
Got to get you over 100 subs by the end of this podcast.
Right. That's amazing. Oh, if you want, I've got another channel. I do actually have another channel.
All right, Dom, you're pushing it now with the other channel. Okay, take it easy.
Okay, but I actually put a content for that this week. So if anyone wants to hear a couple songs, my Firefly Rebellion channel is up and running, and we've got a few songs up there.
I watched the video this week. It was you and the bass player, the woman. Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah, thought it was great.
She plays in another big band here, actually, like a quite a popular band called Little Grizzly Boogie Band. And the lead singer of that band calls her Sweet Baby K. They've all got nicknames, right? So Sweet Baby K. Right. Anyway, she's great. Anyway. Right. So, Kyle, as is often the case, you've had a busy week. And so where are you joining us from today exactly? We see you're in your Model S.
Yeah, basically Newport Beach, California right now.
Okay. And you're by some EVgo stations?
Yes, I am charging at an EVgo charger. I chose the slow charger, the little 100 kilowatt brick, because we're doing the podcast and it's not even 7 o'clock in the morning yet. So I didn't need the car to charge any faster. So I put it on the little 100 kilowatt, plugged in at 19%, something like that. And right now we are at 62% already.
Oh, nice.
Juicing at 85 kilowatts. Pretty good. And just the Model S on a big road trip. So I think I talked to you guys last week. Where was I? I wasn't in Colorado, I don't think.
Oh, last week.
Don't remember. But anyway, been on a road trip for what feels like at least the week. So, been cruising along. Model S, huge range, big charging speeds. Been using the CCS adapter a ton just because we've been near places that happen to have chargers. And so, you know, having a Tesla is the ultimate cheat code to a road trip because you can use the supercharger network and the public chargers. It's just really a fantastic car to get around in.
And how busy, because that's the comments that I've seen this week, as news of Tesla's magic dock has come out. That's in upstate New York, I think. And the Tesla, it was on Reddit yesterday, and the Tesla team took a Rivian actually to go test it, which is a great vehicle because it's got the worst possible location for a charging port with a supercharger. But either way, I saw the reaction to that from US Tesla owners, which is like, oh man, I'm already queuing. So, but they're not going to open up those supercharging stations. But what's your experience with charging at Tesla stations?
California is busy. It doesn't really matter any time of the day. You're seeing other Teslas at superchargers midday, especially like during commuting times. Good luck charging this thing out of supercharger. It's pretty slammed busy. Wow. I've actually never seen it this bad. You know, I'm in California every month or every 2 weeks, it seems at times. And, you know, I've been noticing just every time I come, it's getting busier and busier and busier. And that's really in LA and the rest of the state. I think it's pretty open. It's not unlike the rest of the country, which, you know, most of the time when I road trip a Tesla, especially out through Nebraska and Kansas and, you know, going out through the middle of nowhere, you don't see that many other cars around. But, you know, California has incentivized electric cars so much, and electric cars have just become normal here, that the charging infrastructure is completely overwhelmed during the day. And that is not a light amount of charging infrastructure. Just in a 1 mile-ish radius from where I am right now, there's almost 7 superchargers. Right. I mean, it's pretty crazy. And, you know, I'm looking now and there's plenty open. There's one that has 13 open, one that has 14 open out of 24. So, you know, 10 wow. already in use at 6:59 in the morning.
That's crazy.
People,
I guess there's a lot of people that don't have charging at home, and this is how they do it.
Right. The other one is 13 stalls available out of 20 stalls. And again, 7 a.m. So truly busy charging here. And what I've realized is, because we're traveling through, we're going from here to there. And what I've realized is, if you can't charge at home in California, which sounds like a lot of people cannot, just don't buy an electric car, because it's, unless you want to be up at 3 o'clock in the morning trying to charge the thing.
You need to have really a way of charging your car. You can't have a vehicle that you can't refuel. That makes sense.
Yeah, just like buy the car that fits your needs. If you don't have an everyday charging solution, then an electric car isn't really for you. And, you know, that point really needs to get brought home here, because, wow, it's crazy. Now, at the end of the day, there's more infrastructure that can go in. There's way more level 2 stations that we need more focus on slow charging and all of these different solutions. So, you know, we'll get there over time. But California has gotten really busy with charging. So busy, in fact, we were driving down from San Luis Obispo, which is about, I don't know, 3 or 4 hours north with traffic north of LA. And I was driving an i7 and Anna was driving this car, and both vehicles, like based off of our route planning and everything said, start charging up north, you know, when we were already at 60, 70% state of charge to avoid all of the full chargers in Los Angeles. You know, normally route planning or other, you know, ways would be run the car low and get the fast charging speeds. Here you actually, you want to charge where there's space to charge. And that means stay away from the cities. And so, you know, I think, you know, 80% of the land mass in California is fine if you own an electric car. But the 80% of the population zones, specifically Southern California, all the way from San Diego, Orange County, up into to L.A., wow, just if don't buy an electric car if you can't charge it at home or work.
So I asked you kind of where you are today, because earlier in the week, you were in Phoenix, Arizona, and you got to ride in a Waymo autonomous taxi, and that was a cool little video. That's a plug-in hybrid, so it's not necessarily an electric vehicle, you know, centered kind of thing, but still, it's kind of neat because we're looking at, you know, well, the largest, you know, seller or maker of electric vehicles is Tesla, and one of the big things about those cars is full self-driving beta, which is, you know, intended to be at some point autonomous. So I don't, and so you felt how that kind of operates. How did you feel like the certainty, the confidence of this vehicle in traffic?
Keep in mind, they have Chrysler Pacifica plug-in hybrids and Jag I-Paces.
Right.
And actually, after reading some of the comments, it sounds like the I-Pace has maybe their next generation of driver assistance or self-driving or software. Whatever it is. Mm-hmm. I'll be back in Phoenix in a few weeks anyway, and I want to go try and snag an I-Pace. So I guess I'll just cancel it if an I-Pace doesn't show up.
Right. 'Cause it tells you what's coming for you, though, right?
As soon as you requested it, showed, at least on our side, it showed a Chrysler Pacifica. I don't know if that's the default, but it worked for us.
Right.
And, you know, I really loved the experience because it was a glimpse into the future. It's important to remember, too, that, like, this is a very small geofenced area that the vehicles can operate in. And the likelihood that a general user is going to be taking a ride from one point to another in this area is pretty slim compared to all the places you could go with an Uber. But, you know, if you're in the area, it's something certainly to go check out. And, you know, no safety driver. We were just in the car by ourselves, which was a really neat experience. And there's no like red stop buttons. So you're really held hostage to what it wants to do. So it was pretty wild. And really at the end of the day, I mean, I'll focus on the negatives first. The first is quite a bit of phantom braking, surprisingly, especially during our day ride. So we rode round trip. We went one way, had dinner, and then rode back. And on the way to dinner, phantom braking, lots of cars around, traffic was busy. It really did not give us confidence on what's called an unprotected left turn. We were stuck in the middle of an intersection with oncoming traffic trying to make a left. And the van was like, oh, should I go? Oh, I don't know. And we're like, just don't go. but that was really the only scary bit. The other bit was like, it was taking weird routing to get around main roads. Like you could tell it really preferred to be on less trafficked roads. And that's where it went to go. So it was more expensive and took longer than a regular Uber, but the cool factor was through the roof for me. At least.
There's no driver. The steering wheel is just spinning around. And
the van itself had 77,000 miles on it, something like that, 77,000 miles. And it was rattly and the seats were getting worn down. And so like it's been used, it's a taxi, but was pretty impressed with the whole thing all around. So the positives are it's the future. A autonomous vehicle pulled up, picked us up. No one's in the vehicle and it brought us to where we needed to go and we didn't die. So big check mark from my side.
Right. Not dying is always
like, good to know where the bar is, though, isn't it? You know, like alive is where the bar is. So, wow, that's mega. I love this. That's so cool. I love it.
Before I get into a bit more of your week, Kyle, I did want to mention that AutoSpec Detailing Channel had a great video up this week with Colton doing a very thorough inspection of the Nissan Ariya in the base Venture trim. Oh, also, Cicero Holmes mentioned earlier that he's in his first week of owning a Nissan Ariya as well. So congratulations to you, Cicero. You've been, you know, viewer here for quite a while, and you know, we appreciate you and love seeing your pop up in the comments. So yeah, Colton. So he looks at the panel alignment on the outside. If you're not watching this on YouTube, we're showing like a video of the car now. It looks really wonderful in gray. It's so shiny. It looks like really nice. So yeah, he shows us all the panel alignments on the outside, along with a paint thickness. And then he also goes to the interior, showing the good, the bad, and the ugly. Definitely must-see TV if you're considering buying an Ariya, I think. I think he did a pretty good job. Well, have you seen this?
Let's
have
be
you
seen honest. This? Is anyone considering buying an Ariya?
Cicero just did. Cicero. Why? I'm sorry, I don't know how to pronounce the name properly.
But that's what I don't quite understand. As a value proposition, no tax credit, really expensive, front-wheel drive in the base trim. And like, I actually don't think it looks that ugly, but like, buy an ID4 or buy a Model Y.
Right. I was not impressed with like the, it was a little shocking to see like the driver's seat has manual controls, and there was some other cost cutting decisions that were kind of, you know, evident, but overall,
I mean, it is the base one. So they are trying to cut costs, but sure. Then you're spending, I don't know how much this thing was, $50,000 almost for the one that they tried to cut costs on.
Yeah. Right. I think it looks better here than I've ever seen before, and that's including in person. There's something about this color combination, and it just looks cool. And I've not
totally agree, Martin.
Not been totally impressed with it, but yeah, it looks good.
And it's all detailed up too, that helps. But it actually looks better than I've ever seen an Ariya look in this video. Definitely, you know, he does good work, Kyle. He made it look good. But it's also, I haven't seen that color combo yet, so I think that that looks nice. And you know, I might not go as far as Kyle saying why would anybody want to buy it, but it's with the combination with the competition that's available for this vehicle, it's tough. There are some really good choices out there that that make it a tough sell, in my opinion, for sure.
Yeah, I mean, I guess like
the owner, who's a viewer, is brought the car out from Wisconsin to Colton to have it detailed, and he's had it for almost a month, and he drove around with all the plastic on the interior and everything, so that Colton could, you know, have a fresh car to review. So I really appreciate him doing that, so we could get the videos in with this. And the owner loves the car, by the way, which you know, we were. I guess Colton was asking him about his road trip, and he's like, oh, charging was great. Saw, you know, 100 and something kilowatts, like 120. And I'm like, oh my gosh, I don't know what's going on here. ID4 now does 190 kilowatt charging. And so it's if this came out 4 years ago, it'd be amazing. But it didn't. And it's just like, I hate to be that guy, but there could not be an electric vehicle I'm less interested in. But
I like a lot of things about the interior, not some of those plastics he was just putting out on the door there, but you know, yeah, I like this, the layout, those sunken in buttons. I saw them on an upscale vehicle the other day. I think it was the China one.
Cabin stuff in the nicer trim Arias, like the center console can move, which is kind of neat. This one doesn't. This one's fixed.
Okay.
In the base trim. So I'm actually really excited to drive the e-Force version of this, which I believe no one's driven yet. I haven't seen
it. I don't think anyone's driven that.
Yeah, and I drove in a prototype. Didn't drive it. Right. I was a passenger in the prototype e-Force.
Okay.
So, but without driving it yourself, it's hard to really get a good feel for it. But yeah, I was going to cut in and say exactly what Kyle said. I can't wait to drive the e-Force. So Nissan's been laying heavily into how superb the driving experience is going to be. So let's see what they did with it.
Yeah, wasn't it 3 years ago, Dominic, you went on the e-Force electric press launch and it still does not exist at all?
It was a mule in a Nissan Leaf. You know, it had the system in there, but it's probably changed and it'll feel a lot different in production form in the Ariya. So I'm also very curious because I drove that mule. So I want to see, you know, how different it is, or, you know, how it feels. And if it's as, it was kind of impressive in the mule, but, you know, they're also talking up things, and it'll be interesting to spend some time in it on my own for sure.
Have you dumped your Twizzy on it, by the way, in the background? Have you dumped your Twizzy? Of course it's your Twizzy. It's no one else's. Have you dumped that on him? Poor guy.
This is also my car storage location. He also has my Rivian there, and normally the Model S lives there. I've just run out of space, and we're, you know, building out this hub. And cars are scattered all around the city.
I love it. And I love that channel, by the way. There's something something so relaxing, so safe about Colton's videos. He's just in control. He speaks very calmly, and you know, he's just like, you know, if you were up against it, he seems like the kind of guy you'd want next to you. Like he's just like got it all under control. I love his videos, so please subscribe to that as well because I love what he's doing.
Thank you. Yep, Colton's videos are great. He also had a huge video, which was the Model 3 build quality analysis. I don't know if we talked about it on here or not.
I think I mentioned it. Yeah.
Yeah. Basically, Model 3 is perfect build quality, according to...
Better than your Model S for some whatever reason.
Way better than the Model S.
It's bizarre. Yeah.
Model S build quality is not good. Model 3 was perfect.
Right. Yeah.
Hey, there you go. So, well, that's what Corey told us last week on the show. Right, the more of them they make, the better they get.
That's
right. They're making not too many Model S's, and they stink. So, that's what he said. He's the expert.
I'm not sure if he said the Model S stinks, but yeah.
No, Corey didn't say it stinks. The more vehicles you make, in theory, the more you make, the better you get at it. And that would be the proof. Because how old is Model 3 now? 5 years old?
Yes. 2017. So getting on, it'll be 6 later on. I'm not sure when in 2017 they started. It was late in the year, I think, if I remember correctly.
Yeah. And how many of those have they built compared to how many Model S they built? And so, even the Model S was out 5 years longer.
Right. Yeah. Model S only sold like 50,000 a year at the most, I think. So Kyle, let's get back to your thing here. So you had something of a rate your charge video this week. Rate your charge is like this little thing you're doing where people can, you know, record their experience at a charging station, good or bad, and, you know, put it up on Twitter at rate your charge, or you have a Google Doc you can upload as well too.
Well, the app is on its way. We spent all week with software engineers, interviewing developers, and assembling the team to build the app. So if you want in on the action, email Ryan@outofspecstudios.com and get in on the interview list now because we're building this thing out. It's going to be freaking awesome.
All right. So you had your own sort of rate your charge sort of video. You found a supercharger location that was completely shut down. And at the same location, there was an Electrify America with 2 of 4 pedestals functioning.
But that's not how it, when I got there, it wasn't like that.
Right.
When I got there, the supercharger was working perfectly. And the Electrify America station had 2 of 4, which is, in their eyes, perfect. And so, you know, it all was normal in the world. Right. And then I see like 30 Tesla, well, not 30, but, you know, I see a bunch of Teslas start just leaving in frustration. And I'm like, what's going on? And some guy rolled in his Model Y, backed into one of the broken EA stalls and was trying to charge, on a CCS connector with this little J1772 thing, which like 20 different people tried to do this, by the way. No one realizes. And so they're like, I got the adapter. I don't need any help. I'm like, okay, good luck. The charger says it's offline anyway, buddy. Like, you know, whatever. So, what a disaster. The whole supercharger just offline when people were there.
That doesn't usually happen.
I've never seen it before because the area had power. It's not like the area lost power. EA was still working. The shops there were still working. And I believe the charger's back online now and all is okay. But what was kind of really interesting to see was after it went offline, you know, there's so many Teslas in California. This was one of our viewers who was at the charger. We were trying different plugs. You see this maybe 10-minute period where Teslas were rolling in. And, you know, there were a bunch of people, surprisingly, that could not make it to the next charger. And it was only 7 miles to the next supercharger. But people were rolling in at 3 miles, 1 mile. Some guy had 0%.
Out of spec style.
Yeah, I was like, hell yeah, good road tripping, but like you're screwed. So, wasn't good. And like there was this dude with his whole family in a Model X, like fully born. And he was just like screaming on the phone to I don't know who. And I was like, this is just not good. And of course, the EA station started to build a line out the door, none of which were Teslas because no Teslas had the CCS adapter. And so I was like, I got to make a video. We got all, you know, a line six deep for CCS. We got a down supercharging station. And I'm like, this is, I just wanted to make the point that it's still early days for electric vehicle ownership and driving. Now, what Tesla does do, which is really great, is their cars are integrated with their chargers. So after about a 10-minute window, the Teslas just stopped coming. And, you know, you'd see one or two trickle in, maybe people that knew the charger was there or whatever. But the car showed that the station was offline. And some people were like, oh, I just pulled in to try it because it said it was offline. I've never seen that. And what I thought was kind of neat is we saw a ton of viewers there because there was a big Tesla meetup somewhere and everyone was driving back from it. So got to see a bunch of people on the way back that watched this podcast, that watch our YouTube stuff, which was really great. So, yep, I thought that was really crazy. So made a video about that, of course, but I'm really tired of complaining about charging. But I really don't know what else to do. So that's why we're building Rate Your Charge.
Well, even right. Marquez Brownlee, MKBHD, 16 million followers, which is a couple more than you, but you're catching it quickly. he made a video this week to be like, this is the biggest problem. Obviously, he's been watching you, and he thought, I've got to get in on the action here. And so he made a video saying, look, because he's a big Tesla fan, and he's got his own channel called Autofocus. Cool name. Amazing. I wish I'd thought of that. Amazing name for a tech car channel. And he's saying, like, he finds himself helping people at charging stations, as I think we all do. And he just increasingly is finding people being sold electric cars or have electric cars. And whether it's because they've bought direct, because that's the model people love, Tesla, Rivian, etc., or from a dealer, there's good dealers and bad dealers, but they haven't been told how to charge these things. They're turning up and like, what's CCS? What's CHAdeMO? Or like, what do I do? Or they're broken, or they don't know what to do, or how to pay. And he's like, this is so common now. And he makes the point of, would he ever recommend to his parents or even his grandparents? He's lucky to still have them, to say, you should buy an electric car. Absolutely not. Imagine turning up to a gas station and being like, well, it may or may not work. And there's lots of different things. You've got to work it all out for yourself. And if not, then you'll be stranded. And that's a crazy idea. So even he was making a video this week saying, look, this is going to destroy electric cars unless we get hold of this and train people properly. And that's what we all do on our channels or in person. But I mean, it's not, there's so much work to do.
Yeah, I'm going, see some of our stuff. I've been in communication with him, and we're going to do a waveform podcast on it soon is what it sounds like, talking about the state of charging and all that stuff. So.
Oh, nice. Could be good. Mm-hmm. Nice. That'd be awesome.
Yeah.
Crossover.
Whatever the let's say solutions are, it's going to take time. This isn't going to get solved overnight, and it's going to be compounded by the fact that EV adoption is going to increase regardless of whether or not public charging improves in the next year or two. It's going to take probably longer than that before it even starts to improve. Electric vehicle adoption is going to increase despite the fact that we have very poor public charging available. And the problem is going to get a lot worse before it gets better, in my opinion. There's a lot of things that we need to do to make this better. Education's one of them. The networks have to be held accountable for uptime reliability. We need better equipment. I mean, there's no magic bullet that you could say, this is what's going to fix this. It's going to be the all the stakeholders in the industry get, you know, each doing their own share and improving charging. But a lot of it's education, because a lot of times, and Kyle probably witnesses this too, people pull up to charging stations and they're not able to plug in. And it's because they're doing something wrong. You know, the stations are broken enough, but then they don't know how to initiate a charging session. So that's also an issue that we have too. There's just so many parts to this problem. We can't just point a finger on one thing and say, oh, the networks just need to have better chargers and make them work better. That's a big part of it, but it's there's other moving parts to this. And I think it's going to take the better part of a decade before this stuff really gets sorted out.
Right on. Yeah. It's going to be a little while.
I can't think if I mentioned it, but I've been doing a few more long journeys lately. And I turned up that we have a thing called GridServe here, and they build a bit like Kyle had in Germany. You know, it's, I think this one's 36 chargers under a canopy. And they have somebody, because there's also a coffee shop and a newsagents. There's a Costa Coffee. There's a, you know, you go upstairs to it. It's a lounge. I don't know if you've seen these. They're amazing. I love Grid Surf so much. They've got Braintree. They've got Norwich, the one I've been using. Gatwick Airport's about to open. It's awesome. You can almost guarantee yourself a spot, and because there's 30, 40 chargers, and if not, someone's leaving. And they have somebody who walks around that site in a high viz just saying, hey, are you okay? And that's amazing. Oh, also because I turned up in the Kona and I had my charge schedule still set. So I plugged in, it wouldn't charge. And I'm like, guys, this is broken. And he's like, you mean you haven't got the charge timer set on the Kona, have you? And I'm like, oh, just go and double check in the car. And it was like, what a doofus. What an idiot. And hey, look, and I blame the charger. And I blame the charger. And it's me. And anyway,
you're a professional, right?
And I blame the charger. And like, there was no pressure. There was no making me feel stupid. Like, this guy was super good with his interpersonal skills. He did not make me, like, belittle me. So, I'd intended to stop and get a coffee, but I spent 25 minutes talking to him about, like, just what's your life like? People turning up and not being able to charge. They can charge. They have questions. And that's, I don't know if that's his only job there. Maybe he also works on other things of the project. But every time I've been to a Grid Surf, there's been someone walking around, if not in your face, visible, that you can go, oh, excuse me, can you help me? I'm not saying that every charging station needs that, but it is amazing. It Grid Surf is amazing. Right. And there's European equivalents and... It's that for long distance travel, that has to be the future. Big, big places that you stop. Because I've spent more on the concessions than I have on charging.
Right.
Like, I'm always going to get a coffee and a bun or a pastry, maybe pick up a magazine or something to read for 20 minutes. And then you end up charging for 35 minutes and they've got the space. They're not at capacity. So you spend more on charging and you spend like three times as much on the concessions. And it's a lovely, it feels like a first class airport lounge.
And just, that's the way to make it. Fine. Oh, sorry, Martin. Go ahead.
It's a great place to be.
Yeah. That's what, how to make it financially work, because you're not going to be able the you're not going to make revenue. You're not going to be profitable selling electricity on DC fast chargers. The equipment costs too much. The maintenance costs too much. Demand chargers cost too much. There has to be ancillary income streams. You have to be able to make money another way to justify the investment in the charging infrastructure. And that's a big way to do it, is offering a first-class experience, getting people in. They spend $20 on snacks and coffee and so forth. And that really, really helps. And another thing I want to point out, that Dave, Dubriel, said that I really thought the requirements on Ford dealers to have chargers would be important for salespeople to have basic charging knowledge. Yes, that as much as anything. I know a lot of people said, you know, this is ridiculous that Ford is making their dealers install DC fast chargers and charging equipment. Who wants to hang out at a Ford dealership for 45 minutes on a road trip? And I get that. You're right. That's not the place you really want to hang out at. But it's a piece of the puzzle. There's, as I said before, there's going to be 50 different things we have to do to make this all work. And that's one of the pieces of the puzzle, is helping to have the salespeople and the people that sell you the cars that you interact with understand charging, so they can explain it to you. And GM's doing a good thing with their new EV Live. I'm actually going out to Detroit next week. I'll be able to talk about it on next week's podcast. GM started a new website called EV Live, and it's an educational website. And we talked about it, I think, last week briefly. And it's not just to sell GM's product. If you're interested in buying a Tesla or a Ford, anything you want, you can go on this, and it's a live interactive website. And then you can also speak to somebody in real time. You have the person there and you can ask them any question you want about charging connectors, kilowatts, how to initiate a charging session, how to use EA, how to use different networks. And I'm going to go visit their studio next week and talk to GM's VP of EV Ecosystems, Haas Hassani. We're going to sit down and do an interview in the EV Live studio and talk about how we're going to improve charging and how we're going to help EV education. So we'll be able to chat about that next Friday.
In the comments, Toolman says, is that Tesla and CCS at GridServe? Yes, they have 30 or 40 CCS. I think this is the Braintree one I'm showing you. I didn't even look down at the... That is Braintree. And that's not Norwich. And then also all the Tesla ones around, as you drive around in a big loop. And they're all 350s, so they're all 350 kilowatt chargers. You haven't got to pull in and say, oh, you know, because I would with I've got a slow charging car.
Sure.
And I said to the chap, I said, like, 350 is pretty future proof, but the future comes at you fast. And that's going to be expensive to replace them all. I think they're ABB units. And he said, well, it would be unless they were modular. And he smiled. And I'm like, I'm not going to get him in trouble. And so I said, well, you know, because one day there'll be 500 or 600 kilowatt charging that we all need. And he went, yep, we've thought of that. But, you know, that would want to come from a PR company, you know, a line or a marketing line. But he smiled and said, yeah, well, you know, these are modular and we've thought about that. So they're even future proofing. It's smart. So that's got to be the future for long distance stuff.
Yeah. Hey, so, and speaking of charging, Kyle, I want to talk to you about charging for a sec, but before we do, I just also want to mention that you had a great review or video with the BMW i7 that you reviewed the same car actually earlier, like a few months back, but you're in the same car now and you had a chance to really spend some time with it, and you have a, you know, great video up about it now. I don't know if you want to say anything about that right now before we...
Yeah, well, I drove it for the last, 5 days or so, put tons of miles on it, drove it, you know, took it road tripping and really, you know, when I first drove the i7, I was left with the impression that there is almost no better car I've driven in terms of comfort. No quieter car, no car with better suspension tuning. And I thought, okay, well, you know, maybe I was just like, you know, in my own little world that one day, like, right. I need to go and spend more time with it. So I was coming out to California and I knew BMW wasn't going to send one out to Colorado because they were like, we only have a few i7 test cars. And they're like, you can get one, but you got to go to LA or New York. And I'm like, all right, well, I'm in LA. Let me steal one now, and do some charge testing and range testing and all the stuff. And I'll just get it out of the way. And wow. I was not crazy. That car rocks. It's so good. I mean, it's not perfect. I made a whole video but with some issues and like little plasticky trim pieces here. It's a little gaudy. It looks a little weird, but the driving experience is unmatched by anything. It is a cocoon, and I can't even explain to you how crazy isolated you are from the outside. I mean, we all know BMW owns Rolls-Royce, and there is so much of that influence in this vehicle at such a reasonable price compared to what a Rolls-Royce would get you. And, you know, full executive massaging, air conditioned, heated rear seat that you could lay flat in the back with a TV screen that comes down, the suspension that can disconnect the sway bars so wheels can drop into potholes and it doesn't jostle the car. It just goes on one plane. You know, full amazing hands-free driver assistance up to well above 70 miles an hour, 80 miles an hour, where like I drove for, I think, an hour and a half and I just drove like this, like not touching a wheel. It was crazy. Now, I don't think that's actually much benefit over having a system where you do need to touch a wheel and it's very sensitive to your eyes. If you go down and snag a quick text message out, it freaks out. So I'm not sure if it's really that beneficial to the end user, but I had a great time just sitting in LA traffic like this, jamming out to some great lounge music with the ambient lighting going. I didn't even know where I was. I was like, I love traffic. And so this car is really, truly amazing. The problem is it's huge. It's way bigger than the Model S. I mean, it's got to be 30% larger than the Model. I parked them next to each other and the Model S looked like a little Mini Cooper next to this thing. And the other thing is like, it's a very, no one needs this car. It's an excessive machine, of course. But I actually think if you're a business executive and you can afford a Bentley Mulsanne or Rolls-Royce Ghost or even a Phantom, if you're that crazy, this is a kind of understated approach to roll up to the office. It's fully electric. You could have a driver. You could drive it. Either way, it's great. And overall, a really, really great experience. Loved every second with the car. So much technology in this thing. It really took 4 or 5 days to soak everything up.
That purple strip around, you were kind of critical of how that looked in person, and that purple strip that's kind of pulsating and doing weird things. Not so great.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
So there's a couple.
Same price as your Plaid, isn't it? Or is it more expensive than your Plaid?
Well, so the new Plaids have dropped in price quite a bit. So it's this particular one is more expensive. I think they start at 110 or 115, somewhere around there. This one was 152 that we drove. I think I paid 150 for my Plaid, plus or minus. Yeah. So they were right in the same wheelhouse of price for each individual car, but Model S's have dropped in value. And honestly, getting back in the Model S after the BMW, yes, it's so much faster and charges faster. And, you know, the Model S has a lot of benefits, but it just felt like such a step backwards.
Right.
The road noise, the seating position in the Model S, I complain about it all the time, really sucks. The BMW, you can sit on the ground, you get this wonderful massage seat, you're cocooned. Here I feel like I'm sitting on a wooden bench on top of the car, and there's no lateral support. I feel like I'm just like in open space, and I'm not comfortable in the Model S. The i7's totally for me. Too bad I don't need to be chauffeured around, because I would buy that car in a half a second. Actually, I think what I'll probably end up doing, because I love the i7 so much, is I'll probably end up getting one certified pre-owned or something like that in a year or two, and buy maybe one of the Express cars, and that could be the road trip. I just don't have a need for it really, but what a car.
Yeah. Right now, we're up against the hour mark here, but we've really been
been going here.
I wanted to hear about so you went to see Atlas. So this, and they have a megawatt charging solution. I have a whole bunch of things. So maybe just give us a quick rundown on what Atlas is. Do they make the big truck, pickup truck? Is that
yeah? But Atlas? That's like, as far as I know, pretty not like their vehicle side and their energy side are kind of separate. I don't really know what's going on their vehicle side. Okay. I think they're going to end up making the energy products and all that other stuff.
Right.
You know what I mean? Sure. I'm not convinced the pickup truck's coming anytime soon. Oh,
it just reminds me real quick that Tom shared with us this morning, the Sono Scion, that's it. It's over. Forget about it.
It's not happening
anymore. They're going to go just solar products, B2B or something. I don't know. It's like all this hype and getting people excited and stuff and development and nothing. Oh, it's
so unfortunate. I've been following them for like 13 years now. I think they first came out right in like 2009 or 2010. When did they first start talking about this? And the funny thing is, like, the car really hasn't changed since then. It looked the same. I mean, the tech improved, but it's not like they came out with a new car. That's what it looked like in 2010. And when I got the email this morning, I wasn't surprised. It is so hard to launch a car. Look at what's going on with Lordstown now, too. They've made like six trucks, and they're recalling them, and they halted production. It's hard to build cars, and it's sad. They're going to focus. Yeah, that's the part of the press release. They're going to say they're going to focus on their solar tech and maybe license and try to sell it to OEMs. So I wish them luck.
Well, good luck.
Well, I'm glad I got to review it when I did.
right, because now you can't. It's just a shame, because we can get a little emotionally invested in things like this. Like, I remember when Aptera originally, they had a busy forum, Aptera forum, and a lot of people were emotionally invested in this car and the product and the program and trying to get it up and going. And then when it died or whatever, there's just a lot of I don't know. Frustration, I guess.
And I want to say to the viewers and listeners, I genuinely feel bad when I'm not impressed by something, because I love this move to electric mobility. And when you see something that is a little bit of a stinky poo, and you say that, I on my podcast or on here, I do genuinely, there is a little bit of me that dies every time, because when you see something like this that was, you know, not great. And then Carl actually, you know, drove it in Germany or wherever you were or somewhere.
Yeah, it was in Munich. And I was like, so is this going to be production? Is that going to be production? And everything was like, no. And I'm like, well, it drives like shit anyway.
Yeah.
And so I don't know. But I did like the redesign.
Yeah.
Yeah. They did, and it just recently did that too, right?
I was at their launch party for it. I thought it was pretty neat of them, actually, because I really did give it a scathing review. And then they're like, hey, come to our opening party. So we did. And all of their fans did not want to talk to us.
Oh,
yeah.
Right. At all.
Right. Yeah. David says, like VinFast. Yeah, like VinFast. Subscription models are not going to work in the US. And going up to someone and saying, hey, do you want to buy this EV? It's made in Vietnam. You've got to subscribe to it. No one will buy it. And every event, every conference, I hosted a thing last year, a mobility conference. VinFast were there, their VP or their CEO was there. She was doing several, did like a keynote, whatever. They must have spent a fortune. I'm sure I could pick up the phone and say, hey, do you want to sponsor my podcast? And I'd get some VinFast money. I've said many times, I can't see VinFast working. I want to be proven wrong every time I say this because I want everyone to succeed.
Yeah. So Kyle, so Atlas, just getting back to Atlas. So they have a megawatt charging thing and you got to go check it out. And it had, but there's like a lot to this. I didn't have time to watch the whole video yet. I think I need to do that this afternoon. But yeah, just tell us a little bit what they got going on here. You couldn't charge your Tesla with it, could you?
Yeah. Oh yeah. We charged the Tesla. Okay. And so for the first time ever on YouTube, we've charged faster than ever recorded with a user plug. You know, of course you have those like ferry chargers that can do like crazy stuff. And those are the plate things and big automated. This is a one singular plug that someone can just plug in with one hand, by the way. They're actually going to adapt it and make it a little bit better is what it sounds like. But I want, you know, I'm always on the quest to find the craziest chargers, the fastest charging power out there, whatever it does comes from public infrastructure. And Atlas reached out and said, hey, do you want to, you know, film the announcement with us and, you know, show, demonstrate the fastest charging ever. And I'm like, done, I'm there. So drove down to Phoenix to go see these guys. And we charged at 1.2 megawatts through a singular connection for over 15 minutes, full send, and it didn't even get hot.
Ooh,
it was crazy. So their liquid cooling tech, you know, full cable immersion cooling was really cool. All the way to the pins. There's no vehicle that can charge that fast. So we had to dump the energy into 1400 gallons of water. This again is just a showcase. It was very inefficient because we had they have a huge building. They didn't have enough power to run this thing. So they had to bring in three massive diesel generators and run them at wide open throttle. I mean, full turbo spooling the whole bit. I mean, we were just burning juice like crazy and, you know, basically taking all this energy, throwing it into their charging system out through their cable and connector, which is really the part they wanted to show because that's the Atlas tech. Of course, they'll have their own charging, you know, equipment and everything, but that wasn't finalized. The internal bits, I think, were pretty similar, but their cable and their connector ran 1.2 megawatts, 1,000 volts, 1,200 amps straight through for over 15 minutes. And it was just the coolest freaking thing ever. Best day at work for me because the video is an hour long and they talk about everything. They're showing the communication software that they use to control CCS comms between the car and the chargers. And they're talking about how they wired everything up with their bus bars. And look, we're boiling 1400 gallons of water right here. And it was just insane. What was even crazier was we went back to film another video, which will go up, I think, later today, where we wanted to melt a CCS cable. So we ran 680 amps through a 350 amp cable because I was like, let's blow something up. And they're like, hell yeah, let's blow something up. We're like, great. So we tried to overdrive this cable. And I forgot where I was even going with that. But basically, these guys are just so freaking cool. And that video will be coming soon.
Wow, that's pretty neat. So there's like one standard for mega charger. Is it a standard that the Charon has?
So there's a couple different ones. Charon has the megawatt charging standard, which their chargers will support. They'll have an MCS portion on their handle. And that's what most, I think, medium or heavy duty vehicles who require 1 to 3 megawatt charging speed are going to use. Okay. Atlas is going to put on their own proprietary connector for their vehicles. I think they're going to be selling chassis for like medium duty work trucks or some other things. I don't know much about the vehicle side. We only worked with the energy side of the business, but my understanding is their goal is one day to sell chassis, battery packs, subcomponents for electric vehicles. And that will include the Atlas charging port. And their port can do 50 kilowatt AC bi-directional, as well as, you know, over 1 megawatt DC fast charging. So they seem to believe that there's this really big need for high power AC charging. MCS doesn't support that. And that's why they created their own handle design, is my understanding.
Interesting. Okay. I need to watch that.
Yeah, that's for the nerds. I think it's the best video we ever did. It was so cool.
Awesome. All right. So let's get into some news before we head out. It's So the big news of the week has to be Tesla opening its global engineering headquarters in Palo Alto, California, at what once was Hewlett-Packard's original headquarters. So CEO Elon Musk had a news conference with a California governor and original Tesla Roadster owner, Gavin Newsom. Then later that evening, there was a grand opening party with Elon addressing the crowd. So when I say global engineering, they seem to mean it. The company is advertising for jobs now in Palo Alto in areas including like vehicle software, charging, autopilot, robotics, engineering and information technology, supply chain operations, business support, you name it. It looks like Tesla is hiring. So I don't know. I think our national unemployment figures are really low right now, but there's got to be people looking for a job, right, at some point. Yeah, so I don't know. Did you watch this, Martin?
Yeah, and it makes perfect sense because Tesla is a tech company, and with all the best will in the world, you can say, hey, move to Texas. And heck, SpaceX is there, so it's fine. And there's a million tech companies in Texas now, but if VW came out and said, oh, we're moving Cariad to Silicon Valley, to Palo Alto, and we're putting all of our tech there, that would make sense because that would make sense, right? That's where we, you know, Tesla is amazing because of the software and the tech, and that's where the biggest and best and brightest minds often congregate in that part of the world. So, yeah, you can work remotely. We know Mr. Musk isn't a huge fan of that. And so, yeah, it makes perfect sense. Yeah, they fell out over coronavirus rules, didn't they? They moved their headquarters to Texas. But it doesn't surprise me. They've got a bazillion buildings around California. The whole Tesla right. quits California thing was a one line on Twitter that people blew up. They got a massive amount of staff left there.
He did call California the land of overregulation, over-litigation, and overtaxation. And I believe he's called Gavin, said something about Gavin Newsom, something about a U-Haul driver or something. I don't know.
Well, look,
anyway.
Okay, well, look, billionaires don't like to be told what to do. So
no, they don't.
The rest of us tend to kind of go through life helping each other out and doing things for the greater good. Billionaires hate to be taxed and told, you can't do this, you can't, because no one in their life tells them they can't do something. So I'm not surprised all rich people are unhappy with ever being told. Like, we have rules that you have to, like, the rest of humanity abides by. So that doesn't surprise me. Look, the whole Tesla-California thing, thawing of the relationship, I think it was overblown in the first place, maybe overblown this week.
Right.
And then he picked up his blocks and went to Texas. And, you know, Texas is a great state for manufacturing. You know, I'm not saying it wasn't it's probably a very good idea to build the Cybertruck or there and build a factory. But the best part about it is complaining about regulation. Just the regulation doesn't allow you to buy a Tesla. Like, you can't,
right.
You know, you can't buy a Tesla. So, like, you know, I guess you got to pick which regulation you like.
Right.
But you know, that to me is the biggest thing, that they weren't able to iron out that with the huge investment they've made in Texas, that Elon wasn't able to negotiate the allowing Teslas to be sold in Texas after he created all these jobs and built out this plant. And you know, that's disappointing that didn't come with the package that, okay, we'll revisit these franchise laws and we'll let you sell these vehicles in Texas. And here we are a few years later and Texas isn't budging. So that's super unfortunate.
Right. That's always been a mystery to me, that whole thing. Why would you open up agree to open a factory before you could get a guarantee or legislation passed or something? You know, like, I don't know. This is kind of weird.
And Dom, yeah, real quick, so you opened up this segment saying, you know, the biggest news of this week was, you know, Tesla opened, and I'm ready for you to say, the network up with the you went in a different direction on me there, I think the biggest news is that we've seen the magic dock and there's actually superchargers in the ground now that will be able to charge CCS vehicles. It's not enabled yet, but they're there. So let's segue into that.
And it was on Reddit, I believe, originally. I've tracked down the post last night and I was looking at it, and I don't know what happened to my brain short circuited it. I didn't put it in my notes at all today. It's like, I know.
Well, we can't talk about it then.
I guess I'm fired.
It's not in the show notes.
All right, everyone. Sorry, we're going to have to talk about this next week. We can't. It's not on the list.
This is the best solution ever. Trust Tesla to get it right. The fact that if you're a Tesla driver, you pull up and you just take out from the holster. Is there an official name for it? We'll call it the holster. So you just take it out and you plug it in. It's normal. Everything's normal. The cable is the right length. It's all good. And then if you are like me, I use the app, and the first box at the top when you have your Tesla account is charge your non-Tesla, and you click on it and it just finds the nearest station to you. It's all very, very intuitive. You go, oh, I'm here. And you say, I want to charge on 1A, 1B, 2A, 2B, whatever. You click on that, and then it says plug your vehicle in. Or maybe you plug in first. I forget which way around. But then, with the way we think this is going to work, is that you grab that cable, and out of the holster comes the end of the, I'll say, Tesla connector. Let's call it the NACS connector, because that's what they'd like us to. And then there's also a CCS adapter on the end of it that's locked in, because we were thinking, well, if I'm a non-Tesla buyer, am I going to have to buy one of these? There's no more pictures there, but you know, I'm going to buy one of these and have it in my boot all the time. And no, it just locks in. It locks into the station. It's an elegant solution. We haven't seen it working yet, but I think it's very cool. I mean, the cable's not long enough. It's going to cause friction there.
Right. But, is it kind of interesting? So look, it's according to the person who made this post on Reddit that Tesla brought a Rivian actually there to test it out. So I thought that was kind of neat. But then other people were commenting that it wasn't live yet, possibly.
So, it's not live yet. So the way that this will work is you'll roll up, you'll be able to charge normally. Now, I imagine they did this in upstate New York because it's near their supercharger factory, the supercharger team in Buffalo. And right. And my understanding is they installed 70 of these in New York yesterday. A huge rollout. It's not just this one location. Is what I'm understanding.
Okay.
And one of my viewers, friends, guys that I know was there checking it out, and I think he said I could use this photo. I hope so, because I saw it online as well. If you pan over to my side here, you'll see this is what it looks like on the inside.
Oh, wow. Nice.
So super clean. So this little CCS bit here will, I assume, when you unlock it from the Tesla app, just slide out and you'll have a very manageable CCS size. It looks like they made it just as small as they could. So it's not that whole thing you got to plug in your car, which is what I was picturing in my head. It's a small cutout inside of there. And I know they did a huge rollout there. My understanding is there might be some in California coming, rumors that I've heard from inside the company. But either way, I really am, as soon as it opens, I want to get there ASAP as possible, as Michael Scott once said, and really get there.
You're going to have to hurry if you want to get there before Tom, because it looks like he's already on his way.
Well, it's okay, because my dad's already ahead of him. So,
oh, really? I see your dad's in the comments here, actually, too.
So for our US viewers, that's what I see. It's not going to focus, is it? But that's what I see on mine. And it just, like, the very top box of my app is charge your non-Tesla. You know, you click on that, and it brings up a map, and there's nothing near me, but brilliant, thanks. But, you know, and then that's the whole of Europe. And it'll show you all the locations I can choose. And as a non-Tesla owner, I go, well, I'm at this one. And then you follow the instructions. It's brilliant. It works really well.
Right. Yeah, I can't wait.
It'll hopefully look something like that, like the Tesla connector here, and it's going to pull out. And then this would plug into your CCS vehicle. This is the opposite, the Tesla connector that was made by the company out of Ukraine. I don't believe they're selling them anymore right now with the problems they have going on over there. But I bought this a while ago, and it's probably going to be very similar to that, where this will pull out with the cable, and this will plug into your vehicle like that. So you can't really get much smaller than that. So, you know.
So we thought you'd already left. You're already headed to upstate New York.
If it was working, if you could use it, I'd take a ride up there. At least the one that they announced, Kyle said there's more locations. This one location is pretty far from me. It's about 260 miles. So it would be more than a 4-hour drive. So if it was working, I'd go up there, but you can't use it yet. So we already have pictures. So what's the use of driving up there just to get what we already have?
Right. Yeah, we'll have to keep our ears peeled whatever. We'll have to, as soon as that happens, as soon as they're live, we got to get on there. All right. So another bit of big news this week is the launch of Galaxy by the huge automaker Geely, Chinese automaker. So we don't have to spend a lot of time on this since we don't know of any U.S. or global ambitions yet. But still, Geely is becoming increasingly important. So I thought we should talk about it a little bit. It owns Geely Auto, Geometry, Maple, Zeekr, Volvo Cars, Polestar, Lincoln Co., Proton is a old Malaysian company, and Lotus, and the London EV company makes the London cabs, and they have a few other things as well. So despite being a brand spanking new brand, they had two vehicles at the launch. One was actually a production model, the Galaxy L7 plug-in hybrid SUV, while the other was the Galaxy Lite, fully electric concept. So the brand plans on introducing 7 models over the next 2 years, starting with that L7 this summer, followed by another plug-in hybrid in the fall, and then the production version of the Lite concept here, built on the Geely SEA platform, is expected to go on sale in the fourth quarter of this year and will be called the Galaxy E8. So, Tom, what's your take on this move? It seemed like you had another premium brand split between plug-in hybrids and all-electrics. It also seems like Geely is trying to compete by just throwing spaghetti at the wall to see what sticks. Or maybe I'm being too flippant. I don't know.
My biggest point on this is, God, did that rip off the Taycan or what? The Galaxy Lite? Look at that. Okay. I mean, look at the rear tail lights and everything.
Okay. Like, I do see a little bit. Yeah.
Not a little bit. There's a lot. Look at the whole second half of that vehicle. Yeah. Look at the whole second half of the vehicle. Mm-hmm. For years we had criticized Chinese car makers for just cloning existing cars. And, hopefully their design language was going to move away from that. But I can't help but see Taycan all over that vehicle. And that bothers me. You know, it's like, okay, you want to walk. You're saying you could build cars and design cars and compete on a global scale. Stop making them look like existing cars, you know. And I know it's getting harder and harder because everything's got to be aerodynamic, so the general form is kind of all molding together in somewhat, but that bothered me when I saw this, and I looked at it from all the different angles, and I was like, I can't not see a Taycan or an Audi GT e-tron GT when I look at this, and I don't like that. But as far as the whole move, Tom, again, no real information about the light vehicle at all. Very little information.
Right. We don't know anything.
No word on whether this is ever going to get sold outside of China.
Right.
And, cool. Keep making them, but give us more information, something we could dig our teeth into, and I'll be more interested in looking into it.
No, that's totally fair. There's not a whole lot to go on, but like I said, it's a really big mover in the EV space. So it's just worth mentioning and just showing people this is happening, and then we can move on to the next thing.
But I hear Galaxy, and I think Ford Galaxy. So good luck.
We don't have that here.
Good luck selling the Galaxies here, because Ford will say, "I don't think you are."
Oh, that's interesting.
Ford Galaxy been around forever, so
I have no idea. I mean, we have like a Galaxy's Ford Galaxy to us in North America is like the big saloons, the big sedans from the 60s.
People carrier for us, so yeah.
Galaxy 500. Yep. Awesome. So let's move on. So our good news from our friends at Toyota, it will start making EVs in the U.S. at its Kentucky plant, which, by the way, is its largest factory. Its largest factory anywhere. It makes the Camry, RAV4, Lexus ES there currently, along with engines. So as we've talked about on the show, Toyota has a new CEO named Koji Sato. Now he said that pivoting to EVs is like a priority for him, and this announcement might be used as evidence of that. So Toyota plans to produce 10,000 vehicles a month, EVs, by the end of 2025. It's going to keep all making some other, hybrids or other cars there as well. So it's going to ramp up to 200,000 vehicles from 2026. So Kyle, do these numbers sound like a pivot to EVs to you, or is this like just a way to be competitive with a couple models by getting them eligible for incentives built into the IRA Act?
Yeah, you know, I'm not totally sure it's going to make a much of a difference, but also I'm not sure if anyone will hold them accountable for this. You know, what we really should do is we should do a podcast episode on all the automaker predictions from 5 years ago and see who was right or wrong. And my guess is less than 50% would have been on target, which means we probably shouldn't talk about future predictions.
Right. Right.
Is my thought.
Right. Well, I mean, people, companies set goals, you know, we have to, you know, that's part of the news. The news, the demand, so this is their ambition.
Doesn't
this
it suck, though? I wish it wasn't part of the news because it that's the thing. The companies know it gets into the news, so they say the things to get into the news, and then they get us talking about it, and then it never happens. But this this is a very, for Toyota, this is a very easy task. If they wanted to do this, they seriously could. The problem is they still have yet to prove they can make a good electric car. You know, an electric car requires a fully well-rounded package in many different areas to perform at a certain level that's okay for the end user. Right now, they don't offer that experience, and they've shown no plans to offer a better experience than what they do now. That's not to say I'm a BZ4X hater. I actually like the way the BZ4X drives. I think it's actually great. When you're on a dirt road with their all-wheel drive systems, truly awesome. One of the best out there, surprisingly. But their charging, their range, the way they communicate to drivers, the way things feel and operate, their thermal systems, potentially that they don't allow a certain number of DC fast charging kilowatt hours to be flown in over a period of time so you could get stranded on a road trip. All of these things are showing me Toyota doesn't get it. And so, it's really, really crazy.
Was it? That's not. I was reading an EV that someone's claiming that you couldn't charge it twice or fast charge it more than twice in a day or some 24 hours. That's not this one, right?
Right. Well, I am going to get one to review. Okay. And because somehow Toyota always lets us borrow their cars. They're great. I mean, they get it. The what's crazy is the people in the US understand. They're like, we know EVs, these are our products, and this is what their intention is. And their intention is not to be a long distance road tripping car. And for that, like my neighbors just got a Solterra, same thing underneath, and it works perfectly for them and they love it and it's great. And so, you know, totally fine. But at the end of the day, I don't think Toyota gets it. And this is not enough electric cars to make a difference for anyone.
Right. And it's like 200,000 vehicles by the end of 2026. That's, you know, I don't know. Everyone's got a lot bigger ambitions. Tesla's already making more than that, right? I don't know. I don't know where you go with that.
4 years from now, Don, the end of 2026, right. 200,000 cars. You know, I mean, Ford's going to make 150,000 Lightning a year by the end of this year. That's just one of their vehicles. So, you know.
Well, look at that. Martin, I said Martin. Look at he pulled up here. If you're watching us, if you're not watching us on YouTube, Martin's pulled up a little thing post from the Inside EVs forum, where a BZ4X owner is mentioning that over the Christmas holiday they discovered there's a hard coded limit of 2 DC fast charging sessions per 24 hours, which he mentions, and I kind of think too that's kind of ridiculous.
I'm also trying to think. I've charged one more than twice in 24 hours.
Okay.
So I'm not sure what, if it's up. You know, I only drove the all-wheel drive. The front-wheel drive gets a different battery than the all-wheel drive. Mm-hmm. And Todd is the one who mentioned to me that this is a thing. That's why I want to get one to test it.
Okay. Right, right. Yeah. That's maybe it's a kilowatt hour limit or something. So only so many kilowatt hours in a certain time span. But yeah, that'd be interesting to know. Just going through the news, a couple of things we wanted to mention real quick. The Rivian has pushed back its R1T Max Pack delivery window, estimate to April. So it's a little bit farther away. I believe, Tom, was it you with the Max Pack on order? No, it's Kyle.
Yep, it's got one on order.
Okay. Have you heard anything about it when you're getting it yet? Okay.
Honestly, I like my truck's fine. I don't think I really think everyone who's waiting for the Max Pack probably doesn't need it. I would say 5% of them will need it.
Right. It'll come in handy for big towing owners, maybe.
Yeah. But the problem is you still have to charge the thing at charging stations. So
sure.
I don't know if this difference will mean you can skip one charger on a long trip, two chargers on a long trip, but ultimately you're going to be sticking. Now the big benefit will come. We don't know anything about the max pack. If it's going to be an 800 volt system architecture, that's the reason to upgrade right there.
Right.
But we're not 100% sure it will be. And I would think it's probably not.
Right. You would think that'd be part of the regular one anyway. There's no reason not to have 800 volts, and it's already got 135 kilowatt hours in that regular one.
Yeah, well, the reason not to have it is the engineering cost for it, and the benefits are pretty low. The main benefit would be charging.
Right. All right. So a couple other things I want to mention. Hyundai's plant in Montgomery has rolled out its first electric vehicle. That's the U.S.-made, the 2023 Genesis Electrified GV70. And it's priced from $65,850. So a little pricey, but it's also, they only go up to GV80. So it's close to their top vehicle.
Tax credit. It's less than 80K. So tax credit applies, which is brilliant.
Right. So that's that. Oh, and also another piece we got on our radar this week is that the IRA, that the Inflation Reduction Act, is really having a lot of, you know, effects on not just like consumer behavior, but, you know, obviously company behavior. That's part of, you know, probably why Toyota's, you know, going to make their vehicles here, EVs here, although they probably would do that anyway. But Tesla is going to shift its 4680 battery cell production from Germany to the US. So that is kind of interesting too, because originally they said they want to make batteries where they make the cars, you know, because it'd be a lower carbon footprint.
They built the buildings. I mean, physically they got some more land.
Right.
Yeah. They might still make the electrodes there and some other bits and bobs, but I think the German state they're in have requested clarification on, not that they've taken any incentives and now have to give it back or anything, but I think and Tesla said, oh, there's no jobs implicated, but there's got to be somewhere along the line if you're not going to make the batteries in Germany anymore. So we'll wait and see.
I mean, they could always turn it into another. Making something else, superchargers or, you know, something. The lower cost, the smaller car that they're going to make for the Chinese market, that would work also in the European market. And that might be
Oh, no. We have Investor Day coming up soon, don't we? From Tesla, which won't happen for the next 5 years. Talking about 5-year predictions. Oh, goodness. Yeah. This is when all Tesla fans will hate me. Oh, well.
I mean, Tesla has come through with some of its predictions. It's, you know,
When Monroe cut apart the 4680 cells, they weren't exactly what they were meant to be. Sure. But they'll get there. Look, Tesla always deliver. The time frame doesn't always match up, but they always deliver eventually.
Right. I mean, sometimes they do, like the Model Y production. I believe happened a lot faster than they had originally planned. So sometimes they make, you know, they do right, and then sometimes.
You're right. But well, I know you've got to get on, because you've got to go drive your new Tesla Roadster very soon. Sorry about that. Sorry. And I've got the Cybertruck to go and drive it.
So. Right. Yeah, no Roadster. My what is it? Loot box? In the app, you have a little loot box.
No
or
idea.
But anyway, I think that's about it, though. Is there anything else anybody want to mention?
Buy an i7, you should buy an i7.
earlier in the show about delivery vans, smaller vans for the US, and that we need them more, like commercial vans. And Stellantis is going to try to replicate its European success, EV success in the US, and it's teased the Ram EV van.
That's crazy. Yeah, that's awesome.
158, guys. Awesome.
I need to get some content up there. Thanks for the reminder.
I've got more subscribers during this podcast than Kyle or I did, probably combined in that time period. Good on you guys.
But you guys got thousands and thousands of subscribers already.
Not in this last hour.
Okay. So, yeah, but going back to the EV van, that's going to be coming out like this year. So, yeah, it was announced.
Kyle, did you reserve a Dodge Ram truck? Ram Rev?
No.
No.
It's not for me.
No, it's not quite enough range. They've got in Europe, they've got two battery sizes. I suspect they'll only have one here. So they have a 79 kilowatt hour battery with a WLTP range of 170 miles. So I imagine in the US, we'll see 150 EPA miles or something. So that's great for intercity like work. You know, it's not an open road hauler. But
yeah, I meant the Ram truck. If Kyle,
No, only because if I don't like the idea of reserving cars that will be sold through dealerships, it turns out to always be a disaster. And so what I'll do is, you know, when they go on sale, just like with F-150 Lightning or whatever it is, mm-hmm. you know, I'll just wait for them to hit the dealers and go. But I don't think it's going to have the same impact as Lightning did or as Rivian did, even though the specs might be there. I mean, all the specs seem, you know, big boy numbers all around. Also, I can review a Ram objectively. I'm not a Ram guy, mm-hmm. you know? And so like for me, if I want a truck, I've always been a Ford guy. If I want a full size SUV, I was always a Chevy guy. Cause I like the Suburban, the Yukon XL platform, but I've never gone for a FCA back then or Stellantis product. I don't think I've owned one. The only thing I like that they really make, for me, again, I can review them and share my opinions, but I really like the Citroen Ami. That's the best car Stellantis makes.
Right on. Well, my dad brought home an old Dodge truck one time when I was a teenager, and I thought it was like the best thing ever. So I still have like the soft spot for you know, Dodge trucks or Ram now, but I'm not sure where I'm at with this one. I like to drive it. I think it's going to do good with the range extender idea for the towing. You know,
that's going to be super cool to see how they implement all of that. I mean, it might be just so useful that everyone's going to need that, you know, if you're using an electric truck for work stuff, because no question, towing is the hardest part of owning an electric truck.
Right. For sure. All right. I think that's probably it for today. What do you think, Martin?
Sounds good.
All right. So that brings us to the end of our show. If you have any questions or comments, you can leave them on the Inside EVs forum podcast thread or on our YouTube or Twitch comment sections. If you like the show, please give us a thumbs up if you're watching us on YouTube. Don't forget, you can find and follow our panelists on Twitter. Follow Tomologny at Tomolog. That's with two M's. Martin Lee is at EV News Daily. Kyle Connor is at It's Kyle Connor. You can rate your charge at Rate Your Charge. When you're charging, little video, upload it to Twitter and share. I'm at Dominic on post.news and also on Spoutable, I guess, and Mastodon. Click subscribe and tap that bell icon for notifications. And thank you very much for joining us. It's been great to see you all here. We'll see you again next week. Ciao.